Yesterday, the Supreme Court reversed a lower court ruling against a former accounting giant, Arthur Andersen, that was convicted 2 years ago of obstructing justice in the Enron investigation. The ruling does not exonerate the accounting giant, merely objects to the jury instructions, but even that comes too late for the tens of thousands of people who lost their jobs when the company collapsed 3 years ago. If you were among those thousands who once worked for Arthur Andersen, we'd like to hear from you. If you're still in the accounting field, how has it changed? What were your feelings when you heard about this ruling and the conviction being thrown out? Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send email to us, TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us from our bureau in Chicago is NPR reporter David Shaper, who's been covering this story. Hi, David.
Good afternoon.
Take us a little bit further into the ruling. What did the Supreme Court actually object to?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled that the trial judge's instructions to the jury were too broad and essentially just too vague to meet the burden that should have existed for a conviction in this case. It's notable because it was a unanimous decision by the court, and it didn't take long for the justices to come to this conclusion. They met in, I think it was late April, to hear the oral arguments in this case and rendered its decision in less than a month, which is fairly unusual. And I think a lot of people, legal observers, were expecting this sort of a ruling based on the instructions that the jury had.
And was it, as you know, a narrow ruling like that, saying, look, otherwise the case against Andersen was okay? They didn't address that at all, did they?
It really didn't get into the evidence at all. But I will say this. You know, the government alleged that Arthur Andersen conducted this, in the words of the prosecution during the trial, unprecedented campaign to destroy documents and corruptly persuading employees to shred documents that should have been preserved because Andersen should have known that the SEC was going to be investigating Enron's accounting practices as the firm was collapsing. The problem that was noted both in the arguments, in the questioning, some very pointed questioning from the justices at time, was that there was an assumption that they should have known that there was going to be an investigation, that the investigation was imminent. And that's, you know, the employees of Andersen, and Andersen itself in its defense said they were just following company policy, and that the employees themselves, in fact, thought that they were following the law. As to what was said by Chief Justice William Rehnquist when writing the opinion of the court, he said that the jury instructions at issue simply failed to convey the requisite consciousness of wrongdoing. And he added, indeed, it is striking how little culpability the instructions required for the jury to reach its conviction.
I wonder, though, in the rest of our cases, if criminal intent is, they always tell us, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Well, that's apparently there's a quite a difference in white collar crime from the typical sort of law and order crime that you see on TV. When, you know, if I go in and rob a bank, it's fairly apparent that that's what I'm doing. I'm robbing a bank, and that the intent is to rob the bank. With white collar crime, there is an assumption that has to be made, or that cannot be necessarily made, that the person who is committing the crime is actually trying to break the law. There's a lot of more gray area, if you will. It appears that there's a lot more subjection, I guess. It's much more subjective as to whether or not someone is culpable simply because they have committed the crime if they have not indeed gone out of their way to try to commit the crime and intended to commit the crime.
Now, Arthur Andersen is basically defunct at this point?
Arthur Andersen is just a mere shell of what it once was. Used to have 28,000 employees in the U.S., more than 80,000 employees worldwide. Almost all of them are gone. There's a skeletal staff in its old Chicago headquarters here that basically is just a clerical and attorneys handling civil lawsuits that are filed from time to time. And there is also a substantial staff of maybe 100 or so at a former training complex it had in the western suburbs of Chicago. But they're not really related to the former accounting and consulting practices that Arthur Andersen have. Indeed, I mean, the company is essentially dead. It's no longer what it once was.
If you'd like to join our conversation about the demise of Arthur Andersen and its posthumous, if you will, vindication, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Joining us now is Bob Kemm. He was a partner in Arthur Andersen's Kansas City office for 30 years before he lost his job when the company went out of business 3 years ago. He's with us by phone from his home in Kansas City. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
How did you react when the Supreme Court threw out Arthur Andersen's conviction yesterday?
Well, with a little bit of mixed emotion. On one hand, as your reporter said, Arthur Andersen is gone. It's now essentially out of business. On the other hand, I was very pleased because I felt that for the thousands of innocent employees and partners and alumni of the firm, there was a certain sense of vindication that their good name and reputation had somewhat been restored.
But in a sense, much too little and way too late.
Yes, exactly.
Take us back to the day these the indictments came down. What was the mood in the office?
Well, obviously there was a lot of things going on at that time with the collapse of Enron, a lot of reporting being done, and then the indictment, which completely came as a shock to many of us. Not that there was an indictment, that there was an indictment of the entire firm rather than selected individuals that were directly involved with the Enron case. And it quickly became apparent at that point that the firm was going to have difficulty surviving. And across the firm, there became a great deal of concern of what to do to help the clients and the people.
And what happened to the people?
Well, in our case, in Kansas City, we were fortunate in that through some very good luck and the helpfulness of one of our competitors, we were able to hang on to virtually all of our employees and virtually all of our clients, and we were able to combine our practice with KPMG, and thus, while there were some financial results, some financial downfalls as a result of that for some individuals, for the most part, everybody ended up being able to continue their career, and most importantly, our clients continued to be served.
We're talking with Bob Kemm, formerly a partner in the Arthur Andersen Kansas City office, there 30 years, and with NPR reporter David Shaper about yesterday's Supreme Court decision that threw out the conviction of Arthur Andersen in the Enron case. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line. This is Jeff. Jeff joins us from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi.
Hi.
I worked for Arthur Andersen back in the late 80s. And during that time, Arthur Andersen seemed to have made a fundamental change in their business practice. They had a partner meeting, and maybe the other caller can comment on this. It was called the Eye of the Tiger meeting, where they decided to really sell the name, go out and really sell the name so that the partners could make more money. And I think everybody that was close to Arthur Andersen knew that their partners were making a heck of a lot more money than partners in any of the other big five accounting firms. And I think hubris is what took them down. They thought that their services were so different than everyone else's that they could charge what they did and take the risks on the audits and the other jobs that they did, and that's eventually what brought them down.
Bob Kemm?
Well, I'm not familiar with the meeting that your caller mentioned or even any campaign of the like. Clearly Andersen, for many, many years, was arguably the gold standard of the profession and successfully served clients, thousands of clients, for a long period of time.
Yet it was involved with Enron in both consulting the company and being its auditor, which some people saw as a conflict of interest.
I don't believe that is entirely factual. The $47 million or whatever I saw in the paper, I think dealt was a combination of both the services that Arthur Andersen and Andersen Consulting, now Accenture, which it was at that point a separate entity, independent and completely separate from Arthur Andersen, provided to Enron.
Jeff, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Jonathan. Jonathan's with us from Chicago.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, I worked there for about 3 years in the Chicago office headquarters.
And, yeah, it's a little bittersweet as to what happened. I've got a pretty good pulse on most of the former employees because I run the Anderson alumni website. There's about 10,000 of us that have joined. And the postings that have been coming in have basically been, you know, too little, too late. Where were, you know, all these thoughts that went into the decision to overturn the original decision, where were these thoughts 3 years ago? Because as of now, it's too difficult to, it's impossible to replace any of the jobs that were lost or, you know, compensate these people for, you know, any kind of disruption in their lives or in their professional careers. So, you know, the feeling has been great, but it's more of a cosmetic decision than anything else.
Bob Kemp was telling us that in the Kansas City office, most of the Arthur Anderson employees there were able to land on their feet with one of the company's rivals. Is that true for most of the Arthur Anderson employees that you get in touch with on your website?
Well, you know, throughout the website, I wouldn't say most. I'd say some. You know, some were fortunate enough to be able to do that, but I'd say the majority of us weren't. You know, and it's been difficult for a lot of us. I mean, we have, you know, I've seen people, you know, through the website, I've seen people that have, you know, that still have not really landed on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that they haven't found a new job, but it didn't work out, or it wasn't what they thought, or it was just not what they wanted to do, but they had no choice. So I wouldn't say that most people have landed on their feet at all.
Thank you, Jonathan. We appreciate the phone call. David, let me ask mm-hmm. you a question. At this point, does that last lingering shell of Arthur Anderson, does it have any recourse?
You know, it in terms of, you know, gaining its name and reputation back, it really doesn't. I mean, it's not the firm that it once was. There's nobody really left to carry on. There is, I mean, one benefit is that this does clear the name a little bit and allow some of those who have had difficulty, maybe because of a perception of you know, being tainted poorly with the reputation of the company as a whole, that they can clear their names and have a better time maybe finding work. There's also the specter that they will not be on the hook for as much in terms of civil damages and some of the lawsuits that have been filed against Anderson. However, let's not forget that there are other cases that Anderson has been involved in. WorldCom, for example, in which I think it just agreed to an $11 billion settlement in the financial fraud in that case. So Anderson had other problems outside of Enron and some clients other than Enron. And, you know, I think that this is an important point for a lot of the former employees to now maybe close this chapter and move on. It seems like the government, although it could retry the case, is probably not inclined to do so. It remains to be seen if they will. But this might be the point at which a lot of people, 3 years now after the firm basically shut down, that a lot of folks can move on.
David Shaper, thanks very much for being with us.
Anytime, Neil.
David Shaper, NPR reporter in our Chicago bureau. Bob Kemp, thank you for your time today.
You bet.
Bob Kemp, a partner in the Arthur Anderson Kansas City office for 30 years, and lost his job in 2002 when the company dissolved. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.